This week on Retronauts, we're hungry like the wolves. Hello, and welcome to Retronauts. I'm your host, Kevin Bunch. I believe this is going to be episode 665, which is an auspicious number, but one off from the most auspicious number, unfortunately. But in this one, we are talking about...
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
The Fatal Fury fighting game franchise from SNK, which does not have anything directly to do with, you know, Satan or anything, but it does have Neo Geo. And the Neo Geo is red in those cabinets. And, you know, I can kind of see the combination. I don't know. I'm very punchy. It's been a very long day. So, yeah, at the least, this will be the first half of a Fatal Fury discussion. There are a lot of games in this series. SNK released 9 arcade Fatal Fury titles between 1991 and 1999, which is a very intensive number of games. So, without further ado, let's go through who's joined me for this one. Who do we have here with me on the East Coast?
Waiting on his Alice reveal trailer, it's Will Cuevas.
She might come back. I don't know. It's a distinct possibility.
I'm thinking maybe not till the end of, like, season one of the City of the Wolves DLC, but, you know, fingers crossed. I've been asking her for literal years now, and it's like, oh man, the pop-off, if she gets added, is going to be phenomenal.
And who do we have in our central time zone?
It's Brian Clark from 1 Million Power, and I didn't just bring soy sauce for geese. I brought soy sauce for everyone.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
Yeah, well, and who do we have out in SNK's hometown?
Wubba wubba, I'm in the pink today. Diamond Fight is here. Do not ask me what that means. Do not ask me what that means. I have no idea what that means.
I'm not even sure Terry knows what that means.
No. Terry is a very... Terry might be one of the original himbos. That's very much a head empty, head empty man, head empty arms big man.
Oh yeah,
yeah, no, yeah. He's a total blueprint for a himbo.
Yeah, so Terry Bogard, of course, the central protagonist of the Fatal Fury series. This was sort of SNK's flagship fighting game franchise in the 90s. Is that fair to say, everybody? I think,
yeah.
I think I could.
It's ironically not the first fighting game on Neo Geo, only because they weren't really sure what a fighting game was for the first few months. You know, I think King of the Monsters is considered a fighting game, even though it's more like a wrestling game. You know,
yeah.
But yeah, Fatal Fury hit big, and then all of a sudden, you know, in a couple of years after that, SNK very much got into the fighting game business, where they were making lots of fighting games. And
very,
I would say,
lots. Very, very into fighting games. And we love them for that.
Yeah. And I would say sort of Fatal Fury was sort of like the vanguard in that regard. Indeed, as we get into it, the very first game is actually called Fatal Fury, The King of Fighters. Mm. And then somehow The King of Fighters becomes a different game and becomes a bigger game. And we're not mad at King of Fighters. We love King of Fighters. But yeah, I would say Fatal Fury counts as the first and, you know, the grandfather, if you will. I don't know. The great uncle. Patriarch.
Patriarch. There we go.
It's definitely it's male oriented. I think it's fair. It's patriarch. You know, there's women in the series.
Patriarch's
but, you
know, a good word for a very organized crime oriented fighting game series.
That's true. The central villain of this franchise is very much a criminal, like, overlord. Ruling over a town, a city, a metropolis.
possibly a weeb. I hate that word, but I mean, it's a weeb mobster.
That is absolutely accurate.
I hate using that word, but I can't. It's Geese Howard. What am I supposed to say?
I guess he's video games original weeb then.
He kind of is. Just like, all right, here's this man who's from Florida. He's a Florida man, and he's hanging out He's hanging out at the top of his tower in a Hakama.
He's got the pagoda tower. He's got the pants, you know.
I've often wondered if he owns anything that isn't like his full, you know, Hakama dress or a suit. Like, does he have casual clothes, or is it just like endless copies of those two outfits?
I'm now imagining Geese Howard waking up at like, you know, 8 a.m. in the morning, and he's just
in a suit.
Just suit, already slick back hair. He just wakes up like just like a Jack Donaghy kind of guy. It's up, ready to go. Ready to do some crimes.
I could see Geese rocking like the fundoshi, you know?
Oh, sure.
Oh, I don't want it to. Oh, my God. That's an image.
DLC.
Yeah, they're saving that. They're saving that for City of the Wolves.
That would sell units. I'm not going to lie. I know for a fact that would fundoshi Geese Howard would sell units.
Yeah, so like SNK, basically after 1999, and they had their bankruptcy, they sort of abandoned Fatal Fury entirely and went all in, as far as fighting games go, on King of Fighters and Metal, or not Metal Slug, but they went in all on that too, and Samurai Showdown.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of abandoned Fatal Fury and literally everything else for, you know, decades, but...
Which is crazy, because they, lore-wise, they abandoned it at such, like, a critical, like, turning point in the franchise. It's like they we'll get to that later in the episode, but they just kind of set up some really great storylines, and then it just went dark.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, oops.
To be fair, SNK did not choose that. The financial system chose that, and, you know,
that is true.
I give them credit for rescuing as much as they could. You know, if you use the common terminology these days is spoons. Like, you only have so many spoons per day. It's like, SNK had, like, three spoons. Like, what do we got? A KOF, that's a spoon. Samurai Shodown, that's a spoon. Metal Slug, that's a spoon. And, we're out of money. Damn it. So, but, you know, it survived, you know, and somehow survived. Everything survived. We're, you know, here we are, 2024, going on 2025, I think, by the time this episode goes out. And suddenly everything's alive. Art of Fighting might be alive. You know, I mean, everything's, as far as I'm concerned, is on the table or maybe under the table. You know, I can hold out for my Last Plague Samurai Showdown crossover hit, which I'm sure is going to happen any day now.
Hey, they gave us Hibiki and Samsho. The precedent has been set. It's time.
That's true.
But, you know, even though Fatal Fury, the series, went dark for 25 years until they announced, the new sequel, finally, that's supposed to come out in April 2025, I believe, is when they set the date. They've kept the Fatal Fury characters very visible, because most of SNK's most popular characters do come from Fatal Fury. So, like, Terry Bogard, Geese Howard, who we've, as we discussed, is a weeb, Mai Shiranui, Kim Kaplan, they're all from Fatal Fury, and they're all in basically every King of Fighters game. They're in basically all these crossover games that SNK has done with Capcom or Arika. Fatal Fury showed up in, or Terry Bogard showed up in Fighting EX Layer.
Oh, we did.
Terry was in this Chinese fighting game that's now defunct called King of Combat, where he was wildly overpowered. Like, seriously, you just have to look up videos on YouTube of this guy in that game. It's comedically how good he was. He's in Smash Brothers.
But not Mai.
Mai is not for good boys and girls. No. And
but now they are together in Street Fighter VI, and they look really good. They look really good. You know, they didn't just slap those two into Street Fighter VI. There's, if you pay attention to, like, you know, the animations and, like, just the overall look of them, it really shows that they, you know, put a lot of love and you know, the lore into those characters and their models. It's really exciting.
Also, I guess if Nintendo was keeping track of you know, appropriateness for kids of King of Fighters characters when they put them into Smash, they completely ignored Terry's history of alcoholism.
Butt slapping. That's true.
Which we can touch on. Terry is a drunk. And a baller. He does play basketball. That's in the lore. You can look that up.
Also, big sandwich fan. We know this.
Big sandwich, especially when they're big sandwiches.
Big sandwiches.
But yeah, there was a 2018 popularity poll that was published in Famitsu, and they did it for the Neo Geo Mini, which was like the mini arcade console that had come out around then. And it was a, sort of a popularity ranking of SNK characters. Terry and Geese were the top two by a pretty wide margin. Terry got 257 votes and Geese got 188. And then after that was Nakaruru from Samurai Showdown. Hmm. And after her, not too far down, was Mai at number four, 108 votes. Which, like, yeah, it's 2018. It's some years ago. But I don't think those positions have really shifted much. Especially since Geese showed up in Tekken 7 and people adored him in that. And apparently he has like a whole storyline reason for being there. And they've thrown Mai and all sorts of weird stuff like Dead or Alive, Street Fighter.
Right. SNK Heroines.
SNK Heroines. Terry was an SNK Heroines. I think it needs to be said that an all-female fighting game, they tossed in Terry.
Somehow the man is so popular, he started in a game that's all women, and he just became a woman. And, you know, that's someone's journey out there, I guess. I don't know, but
it's Terry's journey.
Really, really just the winningest fighting game character of all time.
And, you know, of course, all of these characters in KOF, as well as a bunch of other Fatal Fury characters that, you know, we'll touch on a bunch of them as we're going through the games. But, you know, and the biggest character that I think Fatal Fury has contributed is the city of Southtown, which is where these games take place. Because SNK reused that same, like, setting for the Art of Fighting games. They used it for Savage Reign, those take place in, like, before Fatal Fury and after Fatal Fury, respectively, and they use it in King of Fighters multiple times. They even blew it up in one of the King of Fighters games. Like, was it like a satellite laser at the end of King of Fighters 2000 just blasts Southtown for some reason?
It's like SNK's Raccoon City. Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
They liked it so much they made a second one.
Second South.
The Royal Mark of the Wolves.
And yeah, it's really funny. Because I was trying to look this up, like, sort of the history of Southtown, and it does not seem like it's based in any specific city. But in Fatal Fury 2, when you're fighting Terry, you're fighting Geese in Fatal Fury Special, the plane will fly to Florida, and you'll fight him in Geese Tower, which means Southtown is in Florida, hence Geese is a Florida man. And
appropriate.
I've heard people suggest that it's based loosely on Miami. I have not been able to track down where that came from specifically, but it doesn't come across as Miami, so I think it's sort of like an amalgamation of, okay, here's the American cities on the West Coast and in California that we've visited, and here's all of these American cities from, like, action movies that we really like.
It's a very beach-heavy city. There's a lot of palm trees, so it's definitely warm, and people are definitely hanging out there. There's probably surfing. Clearly, lots of people have time to just fight in the streets and watch people fight in the streets. Which definitely seems like Florida. But then again, Southtown also has a Chinatown. And, you know, Florida has a lot of great reasons to be there. But on my visits, I have not seen a particularly strong Asian-American community down there. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I'll take that one under consideration, this Florida-Miami connection. But it kind of checks out, at least geographically. But yeah, Southtown, big deal. SNK loves it. It's probably gonna show up in Art of Fighting 4 that they announced, and KOF 16. God knows, maybe they'll throw it into a Metal Slug someday. Just lean in fully on it being a Florida city.
Then you actually could have zombies in it, officially making it SNK's Raccoon City.
Apologies to everyone in Florida. I can't stop. We'll be right back. And one of the other things that I found really interesting about Fatal Fury is that it's sort of the pioneering game in how you tell a story through fighting games. If you look at the early Fatal Fury games, they have cutscenes in an arcade machine. And they're not super in-depth, but they sort of give you an idea of, like, okay, there's a story here. It's kind of playing out in the background. And, you know, SNK still does that. And other companies have picked up on it since as well.
There definitely was a bold attempt there. And like, yeah, it's easy in 2024 to look back and say, like, oh, this is kind of basic, kind of rudimentary. But, I mean, we're talking, this is 1991, you know, where, you know, that wasn't really done a whole lot. And it's cool that they made that attempt to do that, because it Fatal Fury, the appeal for me personally, you know, really is the lore. It is one of the most, like, fleshed out and coherent, well, you know, occult stuff, you know, aside, it's got a lore that you can follow. It tracks it. It makes sense in universe why things happen when they do. And again, this is one of the first, you know, arcade fighters out there. So like they did kind of set a precedent. They really set a good precedent. You know, I know that, you know, Street Fighter got turned into a movie and Mortal Kombat got made into a movie, and there are some animated Fatal Furies, but like Fatal Fury has all the stuff it needs to be a live action 90s-esque, you know, like martial arts movie, right up there with, like, you know, like Ninja Turtles and all the Power Rangers stuff we got. Like they got all the right parts.
For me, I think that's a huge part of the reason why I fell in love with Neo Geo in the first place, is the fact that early, you know, all the early games had a lot of character, like personality wise, and the fact that Fatal Fury begins so strongly and has this sort of core cast, and you introduce these characters and they all have things going on. You see them right away. It's like, oh, this guy and this guy's brothers, these guys are friends, they're angry at this guy. And, you know, compare that to Street Fighter 2. Like, I played a lot of Street Fighter 2 in 1991. Like, I played a lot of Street Fighter 2 in 1991. But it's like, unless you beat that game and you see an ending,
Yeah. You
have no idea who anyone is. And even then, it's not really that clear. You know, it's like, oh, Blanca was a baby? What? and so much of that stuff kind of gets thrown out later. But it's like, Fatal Fury from the start has a lot sort of together. And you see that in Art of Fighting, and then you see it. That's why those why it even makes sense for those things to even cross over. The fact that they already had, we've got these characters, we got these characters. Oh, well, why don't we just have them come together? So, like, Street Fighter is like the tent pole, if you will, of just showing, hey, you create a bunch of characters, you give them something to do, you give them first names and last names also. Like, these are all these people have actual names. Oh, my God,
that's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Yu doesn't have a last name. Maybe Yu is his last name. We have no idea.
It's a real Mario situation.
What is Luke's last name? You know, he's a new character, and
no one cares. Still can't. It doesn't matter.
It's true, but Terry Bogard, he's got a first and last name.
Yeah,
Vox Reaper in the new Fatal Fury, first and last name. They're very silly and try hard, but so is he. So it works.
First name Griffin, last name Mask.
There you go.
And yeah, this was a big focus for Nishiki Takayama, who was the producer on Fatal Fury and a lot of SNK's fighting games in the 90s. He had this idea, if they used ancillary materials to flesh out all of these characters and, like, the backstory in the world, image albums and magazine articles, MOOCs, like the magazine books...
I know it's a real term, but I'm always gonna laugh.
Yeah, it's so strange.
But like, his idea was like, if you did this, people would identify with the characters more than a standard fighting game would allow, and therefore they would be drawn to, like, you know, check out your games more often and check out these characters. And I think that's why when they did crossovers like King of Fighters, it really worked, because everyone was like, oh, hey, I know these characters now, they're all fighting each other. Awesome. I want to see how this goes with all these different characters who I enjoy.
Good old multimedia world building.
Yeah,
right. It really is amazing to me when you think about how much Fatal Fury is doing, how much load bearing Fatal Fury is doing at SNK, and like all of the games that came out of SNK, and the fact that Takashi Nishiyama came to SNK from other companies where he created games that also built a legacy on, like, in those genres as well. Like,
yeah.
he, like, one man, Takashi Niyama, like, this one man is the center of at least, like, three different genres of video game and, like, two different major companies. I mean, three if you count Irem as major, but I guess, I don't know. But still, like...
Once upon a time.
It's a huge, amount on, like, on his shoulders. Like, God forbid if time travel is real, we need to protect Takashi Niyama's entire life. Because if any time traveler messes with that man, it would destroy all that we know and love about this art form.
I've always found it very interesting that if you count, you know, maybe Street Fighter 1, which he also created before Fatal Fury, as like the birth of the fighting game, you can argue whether that's true or not, but let's just say it is. He invented both the side-scrolling beat-em-up and the fighting game. One guy. Yeah. I mean, not obviously there was other people who worked on them, so not one guy, but, you know, one guy who masterminded it.
I mean, he was the lead. He was the lead. Yeah. He was the guy who was like, let's do this. You know, and you can point out that he was not there for Street Fighter 2. He had already left by the time Street Fighter 2 arrived. But that's also kind of the magic. The same year we get Street Fighter 2 from Capcom, we get Fatal Fury, which is like his own Street Fighter 2. It's like, oh, I did a fighting game. It went okay. You know, maybe some bad voice samples, whatever. Here's my new fighting game. It's called Fatal Fury, or in Japanese, Garou Densetsu, which is literally the legend of the hungry wolf. Garou is such a wonderful word. It's like, it's like starving and wolf together. Yeah. I don't know why Japanese has a word for that, but they do, you know?
It's a really cool name.
it's really fun to say. Really fun. I didn't know, you know, all that part about, you know, it's like two words mashed together. I just like saying Garou. I like playing Garou, and I like saying it. It's fun to say.
It makes me wonder, too, if, like, his idea of, you know, spinning up more merchandise to elevate a series, like, if he only came to that idea because it was a fighting game and he had so many characters to work with, or, like, if he hadn't gone into fighting games, if he would have sort of come to that, like, staying along, like, the beat-em-up path or whatever. It's... Because I don't think really Kung Fu Master or Trojan got particularly that heavily merchandise for as much as I like both of those games.
Well, you know, Kung Fu Master, that was based on a movie, wasn't it? The Jackie Chan.
Yeah. Meals on Wheels or Spartan X. Yeah, that's so true. I guess.
So I think maybe he saw that as like merchandising from the other side, and he's
that's a good point.
So file that away in the back of my head.
Yeah.
And you know, this was during the bubble economy where you could merchandise the hell out of anything and it would sell. So I think that was also a factor. And yeah, there's a ton of merchandising for Fatal Fury. You know, they, like we mentioned, they spawned two anime TV specials and a movie. Several image albums, like, and I was looking up Fatal Fury soundtracks some months ago. I kept coming up with, like, image albums of the characters singing, and I'm like, oh, wow, there's more of these than I expected.
I had no idea that Fatal... I knew Street Fighter delved into that realm, but I did not know Fatal Fury did it, so I probably know what my next Yahoo Auctions project is.
Yep, you got to find some albums about geese singing about...
Yeah, God, sauce. I hope so. Please, geese, be singing a ballad about South Town or something. Like, oh, God.
We need at least one of these characters singing a song in English. Like, I don't know if it's going to be...
Oh, yeah.
If it's going to be Terry or Geese or, I don't know, Franco or something, but someone's got to sing a song in English. I'm sorry. Not Andy. Andy's gone full ninjutsu, but still.
Yeah.
Someone. Well, at least one of these guys is going to have, you know, a story to tell and a song in their heart, and it's going to involve, you know... Victory.
Kim seems like the kind of guy that would get a little too into karaoke if you invited him to an outing.
I can see that.
But in terms of like the multimedia-ness of it, I just want to bring up the commercials in Japan for the Fatal Fury games were really cool. They were like one half gameplay, and then the other half was, you know, basically a live action fight scene. And there's a tiny little bit of continuity going from commercial to commercial, like nothing too elaborate, because after all, these things were like 30 seconds long, 15 seconds of it maybe was, you know, the live action. But even with that, they are still pushing a lore. They are still pushing their world building. I know we're well past that era, but part of me kind of wishes that for like City of the Wolves, that that's what they would do with the, you know, for their advertising as well. But I understand that the cost of that would probably be, you know, astronomical.
And then plus like TV commercials today.
They don't reach.
Does anyone care?
No, the only commercials I see anymore on Twitch because I...
Maybe just like filming it as a YouTube promo or something would be kind of a neat throwback.
I could see that.
I mean, the idea I had for City of the Wolves, if you don't mind me going a little bit of a tangent here, was as we do these character trailers, you do a live action character trailer that kind of introduces a character into an ongoing story, like Rock Howard just walking down the street and all of a sudden, like, you know, Billy Kane comes out of nowhere and jumps him. And then they have like little fight scene, and then it cuts to in-game footage of whoever is the center of that trailer. And it shows like what they do, like, you know, like their specials and their supers and their combos, all that. And then it kind of cuts back to like the live action and kind of sets something up for like the next trailer. And it's like, man, that would be so cool. But that also sounds insanely expensive and unrealistic, but a man can dream.
You know,
I just really want the live action commercials because they did that for Sam Show too. And I love those so much.
Yeah, it's probably too costly for video game companies these days, but Japan still has a long and proud legacy of commercials that are attached to other commercials. You know, Tommy Lee Jones, I think, is approaching 20 years as a coffee spokesman. And, you know, we're not that far removed from the saga of Long Long Man, which is like, I never saw those on TV, but those went around the internet and those are like now a legend unto themselves, the Long Long Man. Look, Google that, folks, Long Long Man.
Enchiro was not that long ago either.
But they are really great commercials, and it's so fun. I mean, I think everyone in this podcast and probably a good portion of our audience, you know, wishes they were hanging around Japan in the late 80s, early 90s, where they just could have been, you know, a foreigner just showing up on commercial. Like, hey, you can be a salesman, you could be a fighter, you could be someone that Terry Bogard punches, right? Yeah, I'll do that. You know,
yeah, sure.
Please punch me, Terry.
I'll take a hit from Terry.
That's one to put on the resume, punched by Terry Bogard.
I think it's the commercial for Fatal Fury 3. It is like, it's like the camera view is through like a limousine and it's following Terry, who's just kind of like chomping through the street, along. Like just like the worst gait I've ever seen. And then it's like, is that Terry Bogard? And it's just like, you know, just horrible anger, you know. It's so good.
It's wild to think that you could have commercials for arcade games on TV.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I don't think that was really a thing over here. I know they tried in the early 80s, but never really stuck.
It's just such a weird proposition of, like, we are going to advertise to you a product that you can't actually buy, or at least probably can't afford to buy.
AES was pretty cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
go find it. Go find it and put money into it.
We won't even tell you where it is. It's somewhere. Go look for it. You'll love it.
It's everywhere
promise.
You want to be. The game center.
You know, surely Midway must have spent at least a few bucks on like a Mortal Kombat commercial somewhere.
If anyone
right?
would have.
You know, I feel like it would have somewhere been in the Chicagoland area. Someone must be out there, you know.
Maybe it was on local cable or something. I wasn't living here at that time, but.
Aurora, Illinois, right after Wayne's World, you know.
What wasn't there like a. Like some like B tier actors who got cast to like be Mortal Kombat characters on like a daytime.
Yeah, they did a tour.
Oh yeah, there were tours. Yeah,
that's what it was. That's right. The tour, and they're like, remember, kids, martial arts is for like honor and peace, and it's just like your movie. That's basically an occult version of Bloodsport. Like, what are you on about?
What game you're advertising?
I ripped somebody's spine out in your game.
By all means, listeners, go back to we have a couple Mortal Kombat episodes already out there. Go back. We talk about all these early games and how they're promoted and the tours and the actors, and one of those actors went on to become a director that you've might have heard of, so it's a fun story.
But yeah, now that we're talking about it, I am kind of surprised we never did get a live action Fatal Fury even in Japan.
We're getting a lot of good video game, we're getting some great video game movies, we're getting some not so great, you know. I'm not gonna, you know, pick and choose here, but I mean, we're in a time now where movies based on video games are becoming, you know, a little more commonplace, and we got new City of the Wolf, you know, new Fatal Fury game coming out next year. Maybe, fingers crossed, maybe the stars will align and we will get, you know, something, even if it's a CGI movie. Like, I, you know, I'll take anything at this point.
B-tier martial arts movie. Direct to video. Make it happen.
I'll be frank. As someone who lives in Japan and I see a lot of properties coming out here and they get, you know, TV specials or film adaptations, I feel like the bar is really low and most adaptations don't even clear that bar. You know, I like easily one of the worst films I've seen all this year was a adaptation of a TV game show, essentially. Like, why does a TV game show have a movie in theaters? I don't know. But Fuji TV paid for it. They put it in theaters. And even Japanese viewers are like, what the hell is this? So I fear that if SNK signed on and had, you know, had some Japanese company, like, you'd get a bunch of comedians in there, you know, a couple idol singers, you know, it's not Johnny's anymore, but, you know, ex-Johnny's dudes.
Yeah.
And it would be a real nightmare. I feel like, the live action JoJo movie is like one of the better jobs out there, and that's still not that great. I'm sorry.
Listen,
I loved it, but it's like
firing some shots here. But we're getting a live action Minecraft movie, so you know if we can have that, the anything is possible.
That's true. Anything is possible
going forward.
As long as we hand wave it away by saying it's for children, anything is acceptable.
Yeah, Fatal Fury is for the children.
Clearly.
They announced an Eternal Champions movie. Anything is possible. Oh, God, that's anything right. is possible.
I can't wait. See, I have to do an Eternal Champions episode at some point now.
I'm glad we're all in agreement, because like for like the last year or two, I've been kind of saying like, you know, I'm kind of sick of everything being like superheroes. I think we need to go back to like that 90s or like, you know, martial arts, you know, wave that we were on with like, you know, Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers and Three Ninjas and, you know, the live action Double Dragon, which, you know, it's
oh boy. Not great,
but, hey, one of my life's favorite trashy movies.
It's so fun. But like, I just miss that so much. And, you know, that's kind of perfect for Fatal Fury, because its whole vibe is kind of like, you know, gritty 90s, you know, fighting and crime. But it's, you know, the games, but they're bright, they're colorful, they're beautifully animated. They got really fun soundtracks. You know, it's all the right pieces.
I mean, that was kind of the North American cover anyway for Fatal Fury 1, right? It was very much like leaning into that aesthetic. Yeah,
some mullet guy punching Terry, and Terry's just sort of like falling over. And yeah, it looks like it could be a VHS cover to some.
It was like a Roadhouse sequel or something.
It does look like that. Yeah,
oh, that is some actual real just some guy energy.
Yeah.
That's a good segue to start talking about, you know, some of these games and the first Fatal Fury, you know, Fatal Fury, the King of Fighters, or Goro Densetsu. So this one, this is the first game. It was released to arcades in November 1991. For reference, I believe the Neo Geo debuted in 1990 originally. And
in arcades, yeah.
In arcades, yeah. In Street Fight.
The home system dropped in 1991, but like you had arcades units out there in 1990. So I consider 1990 the birth of the Neo Geo, even though no one could own it yet outside of an operator.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's really an arcade platform more than anything. So, and so also for reference, Street Fighter II came out in February of that year, and that sort of exploded the, you know, fighting game genre generally. It really sort of set the design tone of the entire genre for, what, the next 30 years, other than some weird little outliers here and there. Fatal Fury did not really get to take up the Street Fighter II design sensibilities, because it was in development well before Street Fighter II had come out, as was the case with Art of Fighting, which is sort of the sister series to Fatal Fury. As we mentioned earlier, this was designed by Takashi Nishiyama, who designed Street Fighter 1 and then left Capcom after his work on that one. So this really is sort of a cousin to Street Fighter 2, and sort of reflects his interest in doing a fighting game that has a proper storyline, identifiable, very visually appealing characters. And that's why you have your three hero characters. You have Terry and Andy Bogard, who are brothers. They're seeking revenge on their adopted father's death at the hands of Crime Lord Geese Howard, who killed them when the two of them were still kids.
Absolutely 90s martial art movie plotline.
Super 90s.
Oh, couldn't be any like, more.
Just this man, Mishihama and his crew, they were watching a lot of martial arts films. Terry is a street fighter. He's learned a lot of his dad's techniques from his dad himself, as well as his dad's old master, Tung Fu Ru, who was also Geese's master. So there's like this sort of like...
There's a triangle going on there that bonds all of these characters together.
And Andy just, you know, sort of went off to Japan and trained under a martial arts master over there in his own form. And then they're joined by their friend Joe Higashi, who's very loud, very like trash talky. He's not really in this for revenge. He's just looking for a good time. There's an interview about Fatal Fury 3 that was translated by Schmuplations. And in it, they described that Joe was designed after the main character of, let me make sure I say this right, Abare Hakachu, who's a kid who fights criminals from Himitsu Sentai Gorenger. And he's sort of the key ranger character. So he's brash, life of the party, he's not super serious. So like, you want a goofier experience in these series, you usually pick Joe. And if you want sort of that sort of like grittier sense, you want Terry and Andy. In practice, they all kind of play the same in this one, but
yeah,
the idea is
they're all Shoto's, you know, Shoto's archetypes, effectively.
It's interesting that because we know Takashi Nishiyama had a background in martial arts and he was very interested in martial arts. So you do like the characters do have different, like they look different, and like their punches, like their fighting styles are very different. But yeah, from a gameplay standpoint, it's like, okay, here's your, you know, fireball, energy blast, whatever. Here's your fly forward and attack them move. Here's your, you know, anti-air, essentially go up move. And, you know, the commands are pretty similar for all these moves. They're not exactly the same, but most, like, they're very similar. They're kind of a little weird to input, I feel, in Fatal Fury 1, but, like, if you get the rhythm, you can do them pretty regularly. But you have to, like, it's very specific. It's not like Street Fighter 2, but it's not like Street Fighter 1 either. It's got a different sort of feel to it, but it's a very deliberate, like, you do the semicircle and you push the button, and it usually works.
Usually. Yeah, usually. I was going to say, they all have, like, one move that sets them apart. Like, Andy's got his elbow dash, and Joe has his mash punches. And I forget what Terry has. I think crack shoot is what counts for that.
Yeah.
Coming from Street Fighter 1, that actually makes a lot of sense, though, doesn't it? Like, if you think about how Street Fighter 1 had, like, literally one playable character. It's like, well, okay, how would you evolve from that? Well, it's multiple characters. They still mostly have the same moves. They might look different, but they're all executed more or less the same. So, like, it kind of makes sense.
Although, let's be honest, when I play Fatal Fury 1, for me, Andy's the only playable character because that one move... Oh. Will win 90% of fights. So
the computer doesn't know what to do with the elbow dash.
Yeah. I'm just doing that all day. Back and forth. Punch. Yay.
And Fatal Fury 1 is so stiff that, like, it's not as stiff as I remembered it, but it's still relatively stiff. So, like, it's one of those things where you have to kind of do whatever you can, especially if you're playing against the CPU.
Yeah, and that's sort of the other fun thing, because this sort of takes the form of, like, a series of boss battles against computer opponents, unlike a lot of other fighting games. So, like, you can't pick any of these boss characters unless you're playing, like, the console versions. But you're working your way through Geese's sort of CD King of Fighters tournament to try to get to him. So you get to pick your first opponent, and then everyone else is sort of random from there. Well, it's not random. It's like a set sequence based on who you pick. But so you have Richard Meyer. He's a capoeira fighter. I don't believe he shows up as like a playable character in anything else, but he shows up a lot in like the lore because he's the owner of the Pow Pow Cafe, which is another very popular location in a lot of these games. It is a
very reoccurring location for SNK.
There's Michael Max, a boxer, who... back in the day, my friend Kin was always mad that they never brought him back. And he was like the only one of these characters who never showed up again.
Yeah, he's just put him on a milk carton. He's gone.
I don't even think he's in the background of some of these things. There's Hua Zhai, who is another Muay Thai kickboxer like Joe Higashi. His shtick is that partway through the fight, someone will throw him a bottle of booze, and he gets powered up when he drinks it and gets access to a very overpowered special move.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about alcoholism, I think Hua Jai's obvious drinking problem overshadows the rest of the cast. I think, you know, it's like if you're worried about your weight and you hang out with someone who's obviously obese, you tell yourself, I'm okay. And I think that's what happens here. Everyone looks at Hua Jai and, oh, this guy's got the real problem. But yeah, they're not analyzing themselves, you know.
I'm sorry, Terry. I apologize for saying you had alcohol problems.
In every piece of conceptual art I've seen of Hua Zhai, I'm pretty sure he's always posing with a just comically large bottle of alcohol. So I'm like, okay, if I knew nothing about Fatal Fury, I would know one thing about this character. Very clear as day thing about him.
But let's be clear, if there was a bottle that we could drink from and let you do that, what Hua Zhai does, we would all be drinking this bottle every day.
Absolutely.
I'd drink that bottle on my way to catch the bus. I'd be like, oh, the bus stops.
Rocket! Yeah, he's ridiculous. They put him in KOF 13, basically for the same reason he's here, because he's a palette swap of Joe Higashi with like a different head. So it doesn't use a lot of memory. There's Raiden. He's like a sleazy heel pro wrestler. He shows up as a face in Fatal Fury 2. But he's also most probably well known for being in Capcom versus SNK. For whatever reason, he's their grappler pick.
Yeah, and this, for the record, this Raiden, R-A-I-D-I-N in English, existed before the Raiden in Mortal Kombat, but that version is more
popular.
And the
Raiden in Metal Gear Solid 2.
It's a weird clash of characters, and I think that's probably one reason why they went ahead and called him Big Bear in Fatal Fury 2. It's like, oh, there's already a Raiden out there. We don't want it. Yeah. And the Raiden, of course, the Raiden series of shoot-em-ups, which is also conflict.
And then a couple of my favorites. We have Tung Fu Ru, who is Jeff and Geese's martial arts master. And after he takes some damage, he like powers up into this super buff form is very much an homage to Roshi from Dragon Ball.
Excuse me, Kevin. That's an original character. Do not steal my original character of a bald old man with a very long mustache and beard who looks frail. But wouldn't you know it, he can grow big muscles and beat you up. I've created that character. I made it up.
My mistake. The legally and medically distinct Tung Fu Ru. And Duck King.
I do love that in later games, they turn him into some sort of like weird like Kenshiro analog. Like he can do sort of like that charging move where he comes up. I don't know.
Does it. The CPU does it every time you jump in on them. And this is an anti-air every single time.
gotta love SNK CPUs.
Yep. And then there's Duck King, who's like this martial arts dancer, and he absolutely rules and is the most 90s
awesome.
Ass Very, character design.
Yeah, the bat of the Florida man. Are you kidding me? That's a Florida man.
Yes.
Probably the most fingers crossed, hope for returning character for the upcoming City of the Wolves. I think if Duck King was announced at the upcoming TGS, that we would just declare like a national holiday.
Yeah, I have not met anyone who didn't think Duck King was amazing.
And at least in interviews I've read and translated with like Japanese players, I feel like he's the character that's best remembered that SNK has done nothing with, that like certain people haven't actually forgotten about, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, like they threw him in KOF 11 and he's just been MIA since. And then there's Billy Kane, or as the game calls it, Billy Khan. He's Geese's right hand man. He's sort of the champion of the King of Fighters tournament. So you beat him, and then you're like you know, having a little victory celebration, and then Geese's goons, like, pick you up and carry you off to fight Geese himself, who throws off his business suit to try and throw you off his building in a fight to the death, which is really funny because, like, if you lose that fight against Geese, there is an animation of him kicking you off the building and your character, like, starting to fall. And then it's like, continue? It's like, well, shoot, I have to continue now. He's going to kill Terry.
Yeah, it's one of the great examples of a continue screen that has agency and urgency, and but it's not traumatic. You know, it's not Ninja Gaiden. It's just, yeah, oh, no, my character is in trouble.
And then, yeah, at the end, you beat Geese and kick him off the building, and he falls to his apparent death, which is extremely funny.
Yeah, and one of the great features of the original game is that it reads the internal settings, and whatever date it is in real life, it puts that up on the end screen. It says, like, you know, Geese Howard died falling off his tower. And it still works. Like, if you play, like, an emulator in a modern systems, and if you've got everything set up properly, it'll tell you, you know, whatever, 2024, 2025, it'll tell you that, you know, Geese died today, you know.
Fatal Fury 2 does that, too, when you beat Krauser.
I'm going to roll the clock forward so that on Geese's tombstone, it'll show that he's, like, 250 years old.
He was waiting up on that tower for a really long time, okay?
Yeah. And yeah, if you're used to playing, like, Street Fighter 2, this game also does not really play a lot like that. Like, you have your special moves, and you can jump around, like, in that game, too. But it's a three-button game. There's punch, kick, and throw. Throw is its own button. And honestly, I'm kind of glad it does, because it works really well that way.
It's so much damage, too.
Yeah, it does, like, a quarter of their health every throw. So that's sort of, like, the key to beating opponents in this game, is that it has a very, like... what's the way I want to say it? Every opponent has an exploitable weakness, and from my understanding, it's very much intentional with the way the game was designed. So if you know how to get them to do something that will screw them over, you can just sort of let them come up and get tossed or punched or whatever. Especially easy if you're using Joe, because he can just slide, and the computer doesn't really know how to handle that. Or Andy's elbow dash.
It really speaks to what you were saying, Kevin, earlier, about how this feels like a series of boss battles. Like, it's like, there is a two-player mode, which we'll talk about, it's very interesting, but really the game feels like it's meant to be, you go up there, you put a coin in, you try to survive Southtown and come up on top, and if you don't make it, well, better luck next time. Whereas by this point, you know, this is the fall 1991, by this point we were all going crazy, you know, battling each other in Street Fighter 2, and it's just like, that's why that one exploded and this one didn't, because, like, it's too bad, because I wish more games offered a Fatal Fury-like experience for two players, but we just don't see that very often, because it's not economical, certainly from an arcade standpoint.
Yeah.
And again, it's also like a very beat-em-up philosophy, too. Like, find the boss's weakness and exploit the weakness. Like, that's not... I mean, maybe some fighting game bosses, but that's not tactics you think of when you think of a fighting game, at least not weaknesses in that way. You know, you're thinking of weaknesses in, like, an opponent's strategy or something, not like a CPU's weakness.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, yeah, it does sort of set this as a half step between, like, a Street Fighter II style fighting game and something like Final Fight.
Yeah.
The way it's set up. And before I jump into the two-player mode, the other thing that really sets us apart is that it has a two-lane combat system. So there's, like, the main layer, and then there's a background layer. You cannot jump between them yourselves most of the time. The computer can, and you can sort of chase after them when they do so. And that's sort of that's something they expand upon in the later Fatal Fury games until they finally drop it entirely, but it's very sort of half-baked here. I think that's the best way to put it.
I always remember the way it works in Fatal Fury 2 being the way it's always worked. And so when I went back to 1, I was like, how do I switch planes? And you can't. You can only knock people into them.
And then jump over after them.
Yeah.
Or they'll jump back and you can jump after them. It's a choice. My favorite is that you'll start getting into, like, a loop where you're both jumping at each other in the air between lanes and, like, just going through each other.
It does feel like a game mechanic that was probably birthed by, you know, the fact that Neo Geo was just so good at scaling sprites. It's like, oh, well, if we move in the background, we can make the sprites a little smaller. It's like, oh, yeah. It feels like it's 3D, even though it's really not. And then, you know, the concept sort of expanded over each game. And I would argue they inflated it to the point where it actually bursts later on. Where it's like, oh, there's too many lanes. There's too many lanes.
Yeah.
It's too much.
Definitely feels like a sort of like, we're going to create this mechanic purely because the hardware allows us to do so. So we might as well. Yeah. We're not going to think it all the way through, but we're going to do it just because why not? You know,
yeah. It's the fighting game equivalent of a Nintendo DS game that makes you blow into the mic. It's like, but they kept with it for years.
Yeah. But it's not nearly as embarrassing as that, though, that's is true, the thing when true. You're playing it in public. Yes. Like, people don't laugh at you for changing planes in Fatal Fury. At least I don't think they do.
But if you're playing Phoenix Wright and you're trying to blow that dust over fingerprints.
Everybody is looking at you.
Yelling objective while you're playing in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what they didn't keep was the two-player thing. So if a second player joins, you both wail on the computer opponent together, and you knock them out, and then you fight each other over who gets to stay on the machine.
Yeah, another example
very
of that.
Very Double Dragon.
Yeah. Another example of that half step between, you know, beat 'em ups and fighting games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So could you call this the birth of the dramatic battle concept in a fighting game?
Ooh, take that.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, this predates the Street Fighter II movie and very much predates Alpha, so sure. Let's say Capcom stole it. Capcom stole it whole heart.
SNK did it again. This was reasonably popular, but not, like, amazingly so. I saw someone put in some details here about Gamist.
Yeah, that was definitely me. So Gamist, I don't think it exists anymore, but it's an old Japanese game magazine, sort of like a hardcore arcade goers magazine. And they did yearly awards where they had the readers vote on the most popular games. This got 10th overall, with Street Fighter II Champion Edition taking number one, but which is not surprising. But what I thought was hilarious is Fatal Fury at number 10 ranked under Art of Fighting, which got number 5, and under World Heroes, which got number 9. But it did get 4th in like a different player popularity category between SF2 and SF2 Champion Edition and Captain Commando.
I mean, clearly the readers were starved for robot Nazis, and it's like, Fatal Fury, yes. Fatal Fury has a lot of interesting characters, but there's no robot Nazis, and it's like, well...
That's true.
It also came under Taito's Metal Black, too, which is all right by me.
Yeah, that's fair. Metal Black's
sorry, got, Fatal Fury.
Metal Black's got a better soundtrack, and I love the Fatal Fury soundtrack, but let's be real.
Yeah.
I mean, glass half full, 1992, there's a lot of arcade games out there, so to get in the top 10, you get in the top 10, you're doing pretty good.
I was going to say, like to be, you know, 10th with everything
that's
going
pretty
on.
Pretty good. That's
yeah. Yeah. You can't really count that out.
And I know it was reasonably popular in the U.S. too. I don't have the Replay magazine figures in front of me, but I remember reading that operators were quite pleased with how it was doing and their Neo Geo machines. So.
But I guess that was one of the strengths of the Neo Geo machine in general. The fact that, you know, if you had the right unit, you could have one machine that had, you know, two, four, I think it was four of the
six.
Biggest. Were there six ones? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I know when I usually saw it, it was usually part of a multi, a multi-cartridge system. So it's like you put Fatal Fury in there, and if a new game comes out, you know, maybe you replace one of the games, but you keep Fatal Fury in there. And like, I always, you know, my local spaces usually had a Fatal Fury for many years because, like, you know, there was always room for another game to go in there. It's like, oh, well, here's a shooting game and here's a Fatal Fury. And oh, well, Fatal Fury 2 can replace Fatal Fury 1. And, you know, that's just.
Yeah.
Unless you work in an arcade where the owner insisted on putting only one game in a multi-slot machine, like was the case with me.
Oh, no.
Yeah. That's a different story.
Yeah.
Sue that person. Sue them.
What a time that was. I'm trying to remember if I ever saw this at an arcade machine, and I must have, but I don't think it really like made an impression on me, because I know there were Neo Geo machines at like Pizza Hut and the Little Caesars near where I grew up had a bunch of arcade machines, but yeah, don't remember this. I do remember seeing the console versions of it, because this did get ported to the Super Nintendo, the Sega Genesis, and the X68000 in Japan, which these did have proper versus modes. They were stripped down a bit, but you could choose from the computer opponents. There was also the reissue on this PS2 Fatal Fury Battle Archives, Volume 1, which has like a unique arranged soundtrack, which is pretty interesting. Because eventually this did come out on the Neo Geo CD, but, you know, the Neo Geo CD was some years down the line, so different arranged soundtracks between those.
Yeah, and by the time the CD's around, like, we're way deep into Fatal Fury and KOF, so I feel like the number of Fatal Fury 1 enjoyers has got to be pretty small at that point. I mean, I know...
Right.
My Fatal Fury story is that I definitely played in arcades and I liked it, but I enjoyed the sequels a lot more. But years later, and I mean like years, I want to say like late, maybe like 90, 98, 99 or so, I managed to get a clearance of the Fatal Fury 1, a clearance cartridge, $5.
Ooh.
$5 Fatal Fury 1. It's like, I'm not saying no to $5 Fatal Fury 1. And it's like, you know, by that point, you know, I'm already in a KOF 98. So it's like, obviously, it's not going to replace 98. But, you know, I can have a good time with Fatal Fury for $5. That's $5. What's $5 now?
When I got my Neo Geo in 2002 from the Gibraltar Trade Center, which is now very much gone, Michigan, that the seller threw in two Neo Geo games, Cyberlip and Fatal Fury 1.
Hey!
And, you know, at that point, I was...
He cared very much about you having variety in your Neo Geo gaming experience with those two picks.
Yeah. I could have also chosen Baseball Stars, but I think I made the right calls here.
Yeah, Baseball Stars is good, but yeah,
it is, but come on. Yeah. Which is funny, because, like, at this point, I was playing, like, CVS2, I was playing KOF, and Fatal Fury Special, and here comes Fatal Fury 1. And I'm like, well, this is a game, but... You know, I eventually very much appreciated it. It's a fun game, and it's a very weird game, but I think it kind of holds up. Certainly better than Fatal Fury 2 holds up, but we'll get to that. And yeah, I guess this is a good point to note the aforementioned TV specials. The first one was an anime dramatization of the events of this game. It's like 45 minutes long, directed by Masami Obari. Who, among his many, many, many other projects, like, you can just look up everything this guy's worked on. He returned to direct and design an animated short for KOF 15 that they did post on YouTube as part of their, like, advertising for the game. So, hey, maybe they should just get him to do another one for City of the Wolves.
Let's go. Do not threaten me with a good time.
And... I don't know if anyone's watched this one recently. I watched it last night for the first time in probably 25 years, but it's pretty good.
I watched it a couple years ago.
I think what makes these animated films interesting is that they were brought over to the U.S. and localized in like the mid-90s,
yeah,
which made them like sort of mainstays of that sort of early anime rental and fandom space. So I feel like people who may not necessarily have played a lot of the Fatal Fury games probably remember them mostly from those early dubs and VHS releases and everything.
I would argue that probably the success of the Street Fighter II animated movie told distributors, like, hey, let's get more of this, you know, get more of these fighting game cartoons. I don't care if the game is famous, just get it over here. So I think you had a lot of a lot of stuff. I think, you know, I guess the, in a way, a rising tide carries all ships. So it's like, oh, Fatal Fury anime, sure, go ahead. And, you know, I definitely, me and my friends were fans of the game already. So like, oh, cool, Fatal Fury. But I think we were the outliers, I'm sure.
Does anyone else have anything they want to say about Fatal Fury 1? Any final thoughts?
I suppose we should address the fact that it is deeply cowardly to have a champion of your fighting tournament fight with a big stick. I guess they are the bad guys, so it attracts, but it's like, if the second to last boss of your fighting tournament carries a stick longer than his own body, and when he loses his stick, he refuses to punch you until he gets a new stick, and you can't really hurt him, I would say the rules are weighted against you.
This is why I don't like Billy Kane.
He's a cheater.
But you know what? That is also sort of like his first appearance of him being just a complete schmuck that he can slap around, because once he loses that stick, he just sort of sits there and cowers and you can't punch him and then until someone throws him a new one, which he jumps up to grab. And then as soon as he lands, he just sort of stands there for a minute and you can just throw him and he'll drop his stick again and you go through the whole thing. So like, I don't know, when I was playing this the other day, he is the one character I got a perfect victory on, because he just stood there like a putz and let me demolish him.
If nothing else, I think this reflects very badly on Geese for making this man his champion.
Right.
And now he's the boss of the Howard concert, the Howard right. Connection or whatever.
They didn't have anybody else. He's all they had.
Nobody.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get Lawrence Blood to do this. You're not going to get, what's his name, Hopper? No, it's Billy. It's Billy or bust.
He's a coward, but he's a loyal coward.
Right.
Exactly.
Sometimes that's all it takes.
On that note, I'm going to jump ahead a year to Fatal Fury 2. This came out in December 1992, and unlike the first game, they had Street Fighter 2 now to look at as an influence. And
Oh, yeah. Very much like, you know, friendship ended with Street Fighter 1. Street Fighter 2 is my new best friend. Like, we are now doing, you know, Southtown's memory. Every character now has a, you know, a home country and is a map, a globe that shows you where they're from. Like, even characters who are clearly supposed to be together, like Terry and Andy and Joe, are now in three different countries. Why? Because that's what Street Fighter 2 does. Everyone's all over the world now.
Yeah.
And now you've got four bosses, and it's like, it is, on paper, it is so transparently Street Fighter 2 again that it's almost comical, but I still played the hell out of this game because I love Fatal Fury 1. It's like, oh, Fatal Fury 2, give it to me.
Yeah. Yeah, so you now can pick from eight characters, like Street Fighter 2. You then fight through everybody, including a mirror match, like Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition. And then you go up against four bosses. You have a returning foe from the first game, an evil Spaniard,
There's an American boxer, and then the final boss.
It's always an evil Spaniard.
Also, we need to say again, the first game had a boxer. And like, no, that guy's out. We need a new, bigger boxer. That's a bigger boxer.
And then they boot this guy out after Fatal Fury 2 to get a different boxer for
the
three.
Boxers
and then,
really just can't catch a break.
And then, they just keep going through boxers like candy. We have Terry, Andy, and Joe back. Raiden is now playable under the name Big Bear for potentially the reasons we were discussing a bit ago about Mortal Kombat. New characters. You have Cheng Xinzan, who is another student of Tung Fu Ru. He's like a Chinese businessman. He's kind of cool. There's Judoka Jubei Yamada. There's Kim Kaplan. And Mai Shiranui, who, you know, probably SNK's most recognizable character, I'd say, globally.
Needs no introduction.
And it's really funny to read in one of the interviews about this game that they did not originally plan on her being like a female ninja character. She was originally just going to be a male ninja. And then at some point someone decided, oh, we should probably have a female character because Street Fighter 2 did it. So that's how we got Mai. And returning as unplayable bosses, you have Billy Kane. He's your original Fatal Fury 1 guy.
Well, look, to his credit, Billy Kane, major glow up. Apparently, you know, Fatal Fury 1, he's like a beach bum in like overalls and no shirt.
That's true. Yeah.
Now apparently he's British, so he's got a really fabulous London Tower theme stage, a really good theme song, a nice jacket. He's like, this is his look going forward, and I'm here for it. He no longer cowers when you knock, because you can't knock his cane away anymore. So he's a little more aggressive. He can be challenging, actually. Can be.
I want a Fatal Fury movie now, specifically of Billy Kane, and that's that whole like 90s thing of like the rags to riches, like New York street kid who finds out that he's actually got like a super rich like grandma in like London or something, and it's just like, you know, whirlwind adventure of, you know, comical mishaps because, you know, he's just a tough talking street kid, and all of a sudden now he's in like proper British society. That's basically Billy Kane's story right there. Once again, a very 90s sort of kids movie concept.
Well, if Fatal Fury 2 takes place where they believe Geese is still dead, then maybe Geese, like, left Billy some money as part of the ruse.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm.
Here, Billy, go ahead. Get yourself cleaned up.
Get a jacket. You look cold.
Hold on.
So you have Axel Hawk. He's the boxer. He's supposed to be retired. There's Lawrence Blood, who's a bullfighter, and it's just such a cool design, cool stage, cool concept. I really like Lawrence Blood. And his name is cool. Come on.
Oh, it's very cool.
And then the final boss is Geese's half-brother, Wolfgang Krauser, who's like a German crime lord in his own right.
Who I feel like doesn't... Maybe I'm missing some things, but like I don't feel like he's as well-remembered as he should be.
I think it's a kind of case where like if you almost had to be there, because like if you play Fatal Fury 2 and you get through that entire game... Meeting Krauser at last and fighting Krauser on his stage where he has an orchestra behind him playing Mozart. It's Mozart. Yes. Like, as a kid, this is how I learned, like, you know, a bit of classical music. And he would disappear from the games almost like Fatal Fury Special. He's already not that special anymore because Geese is back and that game's all about, like, you know, crazy 2-on-2, crazy versus modes and stuff. And then he's missing from 3. He comes back in a couple later games. He's in real bouts. And I know he's in 96. But I think they feel like they downplay him a lot in favor of new characters. And indeed, KOF gives us Rugal, who basically steals kind of the best parts of Krauser. So Krauser kind of gets a raw deal there. And it's like, I'm sorry. But like at the moment when Fatal Fury 2 came out, Krauser was like incredible. That entire finale is just, you know, an amazing. He taunts you. If he wins, he taunts you. If you beat him, he, you know, like praises you. It's mm-hmm. an amazing finale. And it was like, it's stuff that me and my friends talked about for years, you know. I'll chisel your gravestone. Sleep well.
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't write it down, but I was looking it up and I think he's like the only character in this game who is voiced by an actual like American actor.
Oh. Michael Beard.
Yep, Michael Beard. Michael Beard.
The voice of many early Neo Geo games, Beard.
And he voices Krauser in all of his appearances in the 90s. See, if they should bring him back as DLC and have Michael Beard come back to voice him again. Make it happen, SNK.
So is it the same actor? Because I know in Fatal Fury 3, they credit a different actor. Like Krauser's not in Fatal Fury 3, but they have a guy named BJ Ward, and he's the credited actor for Franco, and he's the narrator. But then they credit him as Krauser in later games. So I don't know. Does Michael Beard hand it off to BJ Love? Or sorry, BJ Ward. That's a different actor. BJ Love is the credited name. So is Michael Beard really BJ Love? Or is it a different actor? We need to investigate this.
You're getting some real Pepe Silva type stuff right here. I don't see anything in the notes in about it, but I look at like Krauser's like character design and I get really bad, or not bad, but very big, Fist of North Star.
Yeah, with this gold armor and everything.
The gold armor, cape. just the bod, like just very, you know, very, very, very cone or very T-shaped. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that, you know, really just, if you were there, he very much is just a memorable kind of like in your face character.
He was cool in the second anime OVA too.
Yeah, he was a big part of that because the second TV special really was dramatized whatever.
Dramatized.
They are adapting the second Fatal Fury game. I've been up since 7:30. It's fine. he sort of like beats up Terry really bad in that. And that's when Terry becomes a drunk and Krauser just like sort of goes home and gets back to his day job.
Basically.
Which is Wait. Krauser has a day job?
Yes, apparently he's a bodyguard.
Does he show up in the armor?
Yes. He's a bodyguard, a professional bodyguard, and he shows up in the armor to work. And he just, like, took a day off to go beat up Terry Bogard. Jesus.
I mean, sounds like a good way to spend a day to me.
Sure. And, Terry became a drunk and eventually had to sober up so he could get his revenge. Truly ridiculous. So from a gameplay perspective, they shifted this to be a four-button fighting game with two punches and two kicks, which was just kind of standard for a lot of Neo Geo fighting games. I don't think that really stuck for Fatal Fury itself, but it's not unusual.
I mean, it's basically what they would use for KOF, you know?
Yeah.
Two punches, two kicks. I mean, they have some different ideas of what pressing the buttons would do together, but your basic light punch, light kick, heavy kick, that's basically what they're going to do for most KOF games, and a lot of other games, too, when they realize, oh, I think we got something here.
Mm-hmm. And you can use different button combinations and directional combinations to leap into the back plane, because they brought that back. So now you can just do that whenever you want. You can knock your opponent into the other plane on stages that have other planes they don't all do. And you can also do a dodge attack, which is something I didn't really, like, understand the concept of until some months ago when I was trying to figure out how you actually play Fatal Fury Special well, and I had to dig into the Japanese internet, and turns out there's a whole wiki about that game over there.
Yeah, that's a delves move. Into it. That's a move that I never understood as a child, but also the computer would do it consistently, especially when I attempted to do any like cross-plane stuff, because the dodge attack is essentially, you've got iframes, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you do it right, and the computer does it right, you can almost nullify any attack by just sort of doing it at the right time, and it's like, oh, well, whatever you were trying to do, forget that, I'm just smacking you in the face. And it's like, well, crap. It's like, it's almost like a parry, except that you just get hit. It's like,
yeah.
Well, what am I supposed to do?
And you can only really do it when you're, like, when you block something, you sort of come out of the block, so you can't just do it willy-nilly,
but the computer can. The computer can. It's completely unfair.
Yeah, the computer in this game is truly ridiculous. This game has, like, a really awful degree of, like, reading your inputs.
This
absolutely insane.
I can think of a couple patterns that the computer reliably falls for, and basically each character I would try to figure out what moves from this character's repertoire can I exploit to take advantage of the fact that the CPU will often, like, if you attack low a couple times, they'll block, and then if you launch an attack, they'll try and counterattack, but you'll hit them with your counter. So, like, for Big Bear, I'll do a bunch of mashing low attacks, and then when they try to counter, I'll do Big Bear's charge, and I'll usually hit them. Or Chang, I can do, like, the leaping attack where he sort of jumps into the air and crashes down on them. Like, they fall for this a lot. Not every time, but a lot of the time. And it doesn't feel great, but it's also like, if you figure it out, you're like, hey, I figured it out. So I deserve to win.
And this was one of the first games to have, like, a proper super attack in it, too, which was very interesting. So once you have low health, your life bar will begin flashing, and at that point, you can do an additional special move an infinite number of times. They called it a desperation move, which is sort of what SNK called supers for years and years and years after this.
Yeah. In Japanese, it's Chō-Hisatsu-Waza, which is, like, very literal, Chō is a super. And Hisatsu is basically like special, but I think they often translate super, so it's like super desperation. It's funny, you say infinite, and that is true, but with the caveat that almost all of these commands are redonkulous. Redonkulous. Yeah. Like, some of them catch on, some of them become standard in other fighting games that have super moves, others do not. because no human being should be asked to do these commands, you know? I mean, Fatal Fury 2 isn't even the worst. I would say, I would argue Fatal Fury Special is the worst because that's where you get Geese's pretzel command. But, you know, some of the attacks in Fatal Fury 2 are pretty out there. I know, like, what is it? Someone's got to charge, like, up, I think. You got to charge up or charge, like...
How does that even work?
You got to, like, jump, I think. You jump and charge.
You would have to just do the jump.
Or have just a very laggy move to keep you grounded while you do it.
Yeah, I think Jubei, either Jubei or Big... No, Big Bear's got the flame breath. I think Jubei's command grab is incredibly hard to pull off, I feel. Like, Terry's is one that's actually kind of easy, and that's why it becomes, like, the norm. The power guys are, like... By the time you get to KOF 98, like, lots of characters have a Power Geyser-style command, even though their moves are different, but everyone's got, like, the quarter circle, half circle forward. Although Terry, you can shortcut it. And, yeah. like, only Terry yeah. can shortcut it. I don't know why. It's a Terry move. He can shortcut it.
If I remember, Mize is really easy to do, too, because it's just, like, forward, then down, back, and then forward again.
Right. And I think...
Kim's is supposed to be pretty easy to do, because I certainly see people do it all the time.
Yeah. Andy, I think, is tricky. I think Andy's got a diagonal in there. It's like, oh, shit.
I cannot do Andy's consistently.
And it's also a really hard move to pull off, because it's you launch into the air, and you're on fire, so it's like, if you hit them in the air, they just fall down. So, like, you really have to get, like, if you get them in the right spot, you'll hit them a lot of times. But then, like, if you're going up and you come down, they might hit you out of it. It's a very strange move, honestly. It's, yeah.
There was an attempt.
There was an attempt. So yeah, the sort of lore behind this game, you know, this mysterious German nobleman hosting a second King of Fighters tournament. He's inviting people from all across the globe, not just Southtown. You find out he's Geese's half-brother. He's looking for the guy who beat up Geese in the first game, and he wants to challenge them and beat them up so that he becomes a new legend in his own right. Obviously, that doesn't work out for Krauser, but you gotta respect a man for trying.
I'm fascinated.
Especially taking time off of work for it.
Yeah. He's busy.
I'm fascinated by, like, the Howard family tree. Because you have, you've got Geese, you've got Krauser, Rock, Kane from Garou, and then, of course, like, Geese's wife is, like, kind of wrapped up in there. I believe that, like, Geese's wife is Kane's...
Sister.
Sister, yeah. So that would make Kane, like, Rock's, like, uncle. And it's, I don't know, something about the Howard family, just family tree, just kind of fascinates me. And then you got Terry, Rock's adoptive dad, but that's not till, like, you know, way later down the line.
Yeah.
I do like how Fatal Fury 2 teases the ending in that as you get deeper and deeper into the game, you start in between the matches where you already have, like, cutscenes of, like, the characters bantering with each other. You get little snippets of someone going through people you've already fought. And I think for first-time players, you might assume it's Geese. Like, Geese is coming back for revenge. But in fact, it's not Geese. It's this other guy you never met before. And he's, like, supposedly even more dangerous than Geese, or you think so, even though in the future they would decide, you know what, we just like Geese more, and they would have much more Geese content than Krauser content.
Yeah, and, like, he's beating up the fighters that showed up in the first game but didn't come back for this one, so, like, oh, that's why you don't see Duck King again. Duck King just got his face rocked by some guy, which I thought was cute. Like, this game has some very interesting presentation. It's just kind of hard to play because it doesn't have a combo system, like, at all. So you can do a lot of, like, single hits, but nothing really feels good.
Did one actually have a combo system?
Not exactly, but, like,
it'd be kind of, like, loose or something, like, things that felt like it, but certainly it didn't have a counter, even if it had a system. But then again, neither did Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, so. This one is just, it's very strange to play, and there's probably a reason why no one plays Fatal Fury 2 nowadays, because Fatal Fury Special just does it better.
I think the big thing about Fatal Fury 2 is the fact that because Fatal Fury 1 was developed, you know, basically alongside Street Fighter 2, and even though it came out months later, it's like, it's very much, like, it's not a reaction, you know, it's a reaction to 1, not 2. But by the point by the time you get Fatal Fury 2 out there, you know they know Street Fighter 2. They borrowed so much from Street Fighter 2, but it still doesn't really play or feel like Street Fighter 2. So it is kind of a very strange game if you're into Street Fighter 2, because it's not going to really scratch that itch. It's just going to resemble Street Fighter 2 in many ways, which mm-hmm. makes it stranger, I think.
So I'm pretty late to being a fan of Fatal Fury and SNK Fighters in general, but I do distinctly remember as a kid, part of the reason was just that, like, MVS caps were, like, hard to find. Where I grew up in a small town in Louisiana, so, like, you know, I didn't really have, like, that arcade access. We had, like, the PX and a skating rink, and that was about it. But I do remember one time coming across an MVS cab that had, it did have Fatal Fury 2 on it. And I was just like, oh, okay, cool, another fighting game, just like Street Fighter. And I plugged a quarter in, tried it out, got demolished. And I was like, put another one in, you know, gave it a second try. And I was just like, oh, man, what, like, wow, this kind of sucks. And then put a third quarter in. I was just like, wow, I kind of hate this. I was so used to Street Fighter. I was like, why is he going in the background? Why can't I do anything? I don't get this. But, like, I was also like, 6, 7 at best. I was like, just still very new to video games at all, let alone fighting games. But it left a not so great impression on me. But because, like, you know, there was really nothing else accessible, you know, I just kind of forgot about it for years until, you know, CVS2 came around. But yeah, it wasn't a great first impression, but I have since then forgiven it.
Yeah, it's a very weird game playing it after Street Fighter 2. I feel like it's not as awkward as something like Mortal Kombat, but it's awkward in its own, like, unique way.
I would say that like it was unintuitive, but again, I was also, like, you know, I was a child, so yeah. Maybe that's yeah. definitely a factor into it. You know, I guess Street Fighter 2 was, like, a little more beginner, like a little more intuitive.
The the thing that's surprising about that is that this actually did better in the gamest rankings for that year than Fatal Fury 1 did. They had Special and 2 in the same ranking because of how they did their rankings, and those games came out much more close to each other than 1 and 2 did. But this one actually tied with Super Street Fighter 2 for third place. And it got beaten by Special and Samshow 1. So, interesting. For as awkward as it is, it actually kind of ranked better.
Yeah, for, like, a game from 1992, this is pretty good. I don't know how many fighting games from 92 you've played recently. But,
yeah, not many.
This is
Samshow 1.
Yeah, this is pretty good.
Tying with Street Fighter 2, that's really nothing to see.
Yeah, super granted, but still. And it did beat World Heroes 2 by a good margin. World Heroes 2 only got 7th place that year.
Got Redemption. Vengeance. And, it's got ported around a fair bit, too. It's on Super Nintendo, X68000 again. PC Engine CD, which I do have that copy. And it's interesting because it has a very unique arrangement of the music that is different from what you get on, like, the Neo Geo CD or any of the soundtrack albums. It's kind of cool for that alone. It was also on Game Boy, and which is
fascinating.
Like, it's like the... That and Samurai Showdown 1, I think, were the first of their sort of handheld SNK fighting games that use that, like, super deformed look and play style, and it's really good.
It plays surprisingly well, because I played both that and Game Boy Samshow, and other than just, like, there being, like, a lot of kind of, like, I mean, it's a cartridge, so I don't want to say loading time, but it just feels like there's, like, a lot of downtime between, like, the round ending and, like, score being tallied and stuff like that. But other than that, like, it controls pretty well. It looks great, sounds good. I mean for being on a device like the Game Boy, it could be so much worse.
That's for sure.
There were some Famitsu reviewers who said that they thought the characters looked like they were from a Kunio Kun game.
Kind of do.
Not an insult.
No, it's not an insult at all. Insult. It's very much a compliment.
It was also on the Genesis, and I really want to highlight the Genesis version, because this particular version of the game came out after Fatal Fury Special did, and, you know, they realized at that point, like, well, okay, we can't just put out Fatal Fury 2, because it's the old version, no one's going to buy it. So they sort of like mashed the two games together. So you've got the cast of Fatal Fury 2, but you have like a wild combo system based on Fatal Fury specials. So like you can actually like do stuff as these characters and have some like all sorts of strange combos going together. There's also hidden codes that you can use to unlock a menu for other wacky mechanics like juggle combos. like a modern anime fighting game.
That's bonkers to think about in Fatal Fury 2, juggle combos.
Yeah, yeah, it's super busted.
That would dramatically change Andy's super, you know?
Mm-hmm. And my favorite is there's a code that adds in a full 48 colors per character, which even today is like unheard of, even though you have basically infinite space on these modern games. They don't do it.
So that one got such a reputation that didn't they put out one of the Genesis minis? Because it had
I forget if this is the second one, I think. Because I think the first one had Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, because the second one is definitely where more of like the how I would put it, like the deviant games got put. Yeah.
The Sickos edition.
Exactly. Sickos I mean, edition. It had columns too, for God's sake.
So yeah, very cool version of the game. You should check it out if you have a Genesis. It's not very expensive.
I feel like I'm required to go, haha, yes, every time I boot up my second Genesis Mini now.
Yeah, speaking of Fatal Fury Special, this came out, 93, 9 months later, September 1993. Yeah. This was a sort of a rebalanced, reworked version of Fatal Fury 2. They drop all the story stuff to make it a dream match, which was something SNK loved doing for a while. Just like, all right, here's a game with a bunch of characters you love. Here, there's no storyline. Just have fun.
It's non-canonical. It's just,
non-canonical, yep.
Yeah.
So they dropped those, but they added in more characters. They rebalanced it. They did some mechanical changes, like, say, the combo system that exists now. So you can, like, chain attacks together or cancel them into special moves, which makes this kind of an unhinged game to play. Because characters can just, like, go on the offensive really hard. And they tweak some of the move lists for some of the characters. As far as new characters go, they brought back Duck King, Tung Fu Ru, and Geese Howard from Fatal Fury 1, and the four bosses from Fatal Fury 2 are now all playable characters. So you got a pretty good-sized cast there. And they also added in a new secret boss, so if you can beat this game without losing a round, which have done, it's not easy in the slightest, you fight Ryo Sakazaki from Art of Fighting. So this is the first, like, dream crossover fighting game event that SNK did.
Yep. The scene is planted.
Also is this, yeah. It's also this game's version of the General Challenge, I guess. Maybe before the General Challenge, but
yeah, Kaiser Knuckle has the General Challenge. You finish the end of the game and you have to fight the general, who will just whoop your ass because he's super overpowered.
Yeah.
If you watch High Score Girl, there's a whole bit about it. But Ryo is extremely overpowered. Like, he has all his Art of Fighting moves and no meter to, like, limit his usage of them. But yeah, he's super fun. If you're playing on the console version, you can unlock him and just completely demolish everyone you play against. And they sort of built on this again the next year, 1994, because Art of Fighting 2 came out, and they included as a secret boss there a young version of Geese Howard, like 10 years before Fatal Fury 1 takes place, which is kind of cool.
These are basically the video game equivalents of the credit teases that we get in movies now. It's like, if you're really, really good at this game, you can find a secret boss in this game, in Fatal Fury Special, and if you're really good at Art of Fighting 2, which I would argue is even harder to beat, you can find a secret boss in that game, and wouldn't you know it, later in 94, you get KOF 94. So, yeah. It all comes together.
That's the Avengers of 1994 right there.
Yeah.
So yeah, this game, I think of all the games we're going to talk about in this episode, this is the one that is still most remembered and most played and probably the most highly regarded. You can go on YouTube basically any day of the week, load up the channel for Game Center Mikado in Tokyo, and they will probably have at least 12 Fatal Fury Special tournaments or casual matches in just, like, what, the first page of results.
They have so many tournaments. They even do, specifically because of how hard the CPU is, they specifically do player versus CPU tournaments for this all the time, and you can just see people just getting absolutely destroyed by the CPU in this game. They also, if you go to their location in Takada Nobaba, they have taken the Taiko no Tatsujin machine by the door and replaced the banner above it to say Garo Densetsu Specialu.
Yes.
So they have a Fatal Fury Special banner on their Taiko no Tatsujin machine.
That's right. The last time I was in Tokyo, I went over there and I saw that. I took a picture of it. I'm like, am I having a stroke? What's happening?
I don't know what the explanation for it is. I think it's just funny. I think that's why they did it.
It's got to be like an inside joke or something that just took off.
Yeah, and like there's the Japanese game wiki for this. I think it's like linked in the Dream Cancel page for this game. So if you really want to figure out how like it works mechanically, Japan's got you. They've figured this game out in and out. It's super cool.
Yeah. Also, I would point out that when the Neo Geo Mini came out in 2018, This was like they didn't put Fatal Fury or Fatal Fury 2 on there, but they put Fatal Fury Special on there.
Yeah.
I think later editions they made was like they mixed it up and they put some of the older games and took this one off. But like the basic models that came out at first were like this was the start of Fatal Fury as far as they're concerned.
Mm-hmm. I think as far as a lot of people are concerned,
yeah,
yeah,
they know what people want to play and it's Fatal Fury Special.
And I think the actual combo system is probably why, right?
Yeah, it feels good to play it. It feels good to like chain moves together. Put your combos together. I don't remember if you could combo into any of the supers in this game, which maybe it's for the best because they're all super good once again. You still have the awful motions from Fatal Fury 2, but now mechanically, the rest of the game sort of evens out with them.
I mean, it's kind of like a champion edition for Fatal Fury 2, where it's like, If you have a choice of Street Fighter 2 or champion edition, you're just going to play champion edition. So it's like, if you have a choice of two or special, you're just going to play special. I really feel like this, it's hard to make a case for going back to two when special exists, you know?
Yeah.
Not that I didn't play two, you know, a lot, but most of my hours playing two were before special existed. And once I got special, like, okay, well, thank you two. Thank you for your service. But now I play special.
You play two for like academia purposes or like enthusiast purposes. You play special for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was one of the first games I bought for the Neo Geo after I got mine because, you know, it's a super cheap cartridge. Even today, like at the time, I think I paid $25 for a Japanese copy.
Woo.
And, I played the crap out of this game. I managed to loop in a bunch of people I lived near who also liked fighting games and SNK games. They're like, come on, let's play some Fatal Fury Special.
Also, for my money, Fatal Fury Special, this is the best version of Geese's theme song ever. This is my favorite.
Yeah.
It's the iconic version of his theme.
Especially with the animation and the doors opening. It's just, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I can listen to that song on repeat. Like,
this is the
I
game
would,
that does that.
I don't know if I would need food or water if I had the song on repeat. I would just, it would sustain me through, like, deep space travel. It's just.
You'd have, listening to the song on repeat, you would at least have soy sauce, which may sustain you enough to continue living.
Yeah, give you just enough salt intake.
Yeah, a lot of the new songs in this game are great. Like Tung Fu Ru's theme and Duck King's theme are both excellent.
Dance beat, I forget.
Yeah.
I forget what it's called.
Yeah. And, you know, shout out to the arranged soundtrack for this particular game, because it's super good.
Yeah, this was... The Final Fantasy Special soundtrack was what taught me the difference between OST and AST. Because I remember when I played this game, I loved it. And so this was already the 90s, so I was old enough to go to New York City and look for, like, you know, CDs in you know, import stores. And I remember I would find the album, but different albums, like, oh, which one is it? And I would learn that, oh, the OST is the original soundtrack, and the AST is the arranged soundtrack. So even though the music is essentially the same, that have different instruments, that have different, you know, that maybe they have, maybe some tracks would have vocals added. So I'm sure I ended up getting both and listening to both many, many times. But yeah, this is what drove me there, because I really was into the, like, I love the music of Fatal Fury 2, but again, Fatal Fury Special just has more music, so sorry.
I like, I think that's why they voted it, why Gamest voted it second in best VGM, and it lost to Sam Show, which is a respectable game to lose to.
Yeah.
First place in graphics, too. That's pretty good.
That's interesting to me. I mean, I don't think the graphics in this game are bad, but I don't know. I'd have to look at everything that was up that year.
Was it a slow year or something?
Maybe. The stages to me are very special. I love the amount of attention they put into every stage. You know, the fact that some stages have backgrounds and some stages don't. So, like, you know, on Billy's stage, if you get knocked in the background, it's just a bunch of gears back there. So you just take damage and you come back. So it's like, you know, and Lawrence Blood stage has a literal, like, bull stampede. It's just, it's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah, it's cool because it also brings in, like, a mechanical consideration when you're doing, like, a versus mode for this game. Because whoever the challenger is, you get their stage, right? So if you're playing against someone who's picking one of those characters whose stage has no backdrop, you have to keep that in mind while you're fighting them. And sometimes that's fairly bad, because, like, Axel Hawk, he kind of gets blown up by fireballs unless he has another lane to jump back to. But his stage doesn't have a second lane, so he's kind of boned. And on the other hand, you have my stage, where she has, you know, normally she has her move where she, like, jumps off the wall and does a dive. But on her stage, she jumps off of a pole in the middle of the boat that you're on. And that one's much, much harder to counter, because it's hard to tell, like, when she's vulnerable again, what side she's coming down on. And that makes her super good on her stage. There's a reason she's one of the best characters in the game.
It's like Vega. It's like Vega has the fence in Street Fighter 2, but once your champion edition, it's like, okay, well, he just jumps real high now. Good luck. Good luck.
So this did get ported around a lot, too. I think more than any other game on this list, really.
Oh, yeah.
It was on Super Nintendo, Sega CD, PC Engine CD. Once again, using the arcade card, having a unique arrangement soundtrack. It was on the X68000 again. Also on the FM Towns computer line. And the Game Gear of all platforms, which is actually a pretty good port and almost justifies a Game Gear link cable if they didn't cost so much.
How do you play it with two buttons?
So, you know, on the Neo Geo Pocket games, it's sort of like how long you hold down the button and whether or not you get lighter heavies. Yes. It does that.
Okay, I see.
The characters are tiny, which I think Famitsu complained about on the Game Gear, but, like, it works reasonably well. What do we got for time? We can at least talk a little bit about 1994, and we'll see where we go from there. So, 94 didn't have a new Fatal Fury game, but it had, like, Fatal Fury adjacent things happening. So you had Art of Fighting 2, Geese, your new final boss. Apparently he was a police commissioner before becoming a crime lord. Trax with, you know, Miami, I guess.
Another great storyline right there. The start of darkness for Geese Hour. I want to see that expanded.
Yep. You had King of Fighters 94, which we talked a little bit about, is inspired by Ryo's appearance in Fatal Fury Special. And the conception behind this was you're going to have characters from both Fatal Fury and Art of Fighting duke it out and sort of snowballed from there. So accordingly, you have Fatal Fury and Art of Fighting teams. You also have teams featuring Kim and Mai, which were apparently fairly late additions. Kim replaced Xanadu on the criminal team, who didn't show up until KOF 14, you know, decades later.
Oh, Xanadu.
And Mai, yeah, I love Xanadu. He's so great. They need to bring him back. And Mai replaced Billy Kane and Big Bear on a team with King and Yuri from Art of Fighting, which I think they made the right call there.
Yeah, that's like an iconic team now.
Women's
has
team
been
is
for a while.
Easily yeah. Top three most memorable, yeah. You know.
You know, that would explain why Mai is suddenly from England in KOF 94.
Yeah. Yeah, makes, absolutely.
You know, she's very Japanese, but somehow she's in England, yes, hanging out with King and Yuri. Like, yeah. King being British, I could see, but
sure. She's French.
Yeah.
They weren't in France. And well, Yuri's American too, so
yeah,
like,
I don't know. They had to put him somewhere, I guess. Why not England?
And then you had the this was also sort of speaking of Mai, this was also kind of where sort of the modern conception of Mai as being like a super sexy character got its start between the Fatal Fury 2 anime that made her a lot sexier than she shows off in Fatal Fury 2, the game.
Yeah.
And then you
Do we want to talk about the KOF 94 Mai sprite that is...
I think we have to at that point, because...
So boobalicious that by default, if you play KOF 94 on an American Neo Geo, it literally, like, edits her movement to stop her from bouncing. You have to, like, enter a code or change regions or something, and then, like, you unlock it.
God.
It's just, like... It's right up there with, like, blood. Like, there's no blood, and there's no moving bosoms. We can't have children see this. It's like, you know, for me as a teenager, obviously, in 1994, I was like, you know, it was like looking into the eyes of God. I was like, what's happening? Is this what video games can be now?
When I played CVS2 as a teenager, and that was my first true, exposure to SNK and their characters, there's a reason why my... team for CVS2 was King, Joe, and Mai. There's a reason.
Yeah, definitely the CVS sprite is definitely channeling Mai 94. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
sorry, Joe, the reason wasn't you.
I played Joe because, you know, like you said, he's the brash, loud guy, and I actually loved him about that. I liked King. I thought she just looked cool, and then Mai, she has other looks. Turns out she's also just a really good character. So, you know, shout outs to me future-proofing my CVS2 team as I started to play competitively.
Listen, I'm just glad they're finally leaning into Mai's love of heavy metal in the new game.
Yeah. The base outfit for City is fantastic.
A funny bit of lore for all the characters is like you learn what their favorite hobbies are and their musical interests, and yeah, apparently Mai is a metalhead, and that never really came across in any of the games, but now it is. But yeah, KOF 94, there's an interview about this game where they were talking about how one of the artists was just like, hey, do we have space and memory? I want to touch up Mai's idol sprite. And the producer's like, sure, go for it. Didn't really know what they were planning, and then they showed them that, and he was just like, I'm not sure we actually have the memory to fit all of these animation frames in.
What have you done?
We have one legend to thank for this?
Apparently, yeah. He didn't identify who the artist was. He just said it was a woman who was working at SNK. But, okay. But yeah, it's funny because even if you look at the later Fatal Fury games, like, she has a much less pronounced movement compared to any of her KOF appearances, and
yeah,
it's the KOF appearances that have really, like, cemented for that character.
In the Shmuplations interview you linked to for Fatal Fury 3, one of the questions is like, hey, so Mai's wearing more conservative clothes this time, is there a reason for that? And the guy's like, nah, no reason. So it's like, people already noticed.
Totally brushes it off.
He's just like, she looks
fine.
Yeah,
people already noticed, like, hey, what happened to Mai?
What are you talking about?
There were even people in the Famitsu reviews of some of the ports of, I think, Special talking about, like, she's a little less bouncy in this port. And it's like, well, all right, that's what we're evaluating on now. I
see where it is. This is the next 30 years of video gaming discourse in 1993.
Again, SNK innovates.
Yeah. And then, you know, because they had all these KOF games going forward, it was an annual franchise for a long time. They pulled from Fatal Fury a lot to sort of fill those ranks. So, like, Geese shows up, Krauser, Tung Fu Ru, Billy, Big Bear, Hua Zhai, Duck King, several characters from the later Fatal Fury games also show up and continue to show up. So, like, if anything, Fatal Fury is like the farm for KOF characters. Yurameku kagerou koboreru namida koi suru otome wa muna sawagi anata no shikaku ni iru dake. And also in 94, Fatal Fury the Motion Picture debuts, which was a theatrical release from as far as I can tell, with an original story not based on any of the games. You have a lot of like high-budget fighting sequences. Strangely features Reiko Chiba, who is a real-life actress and singer, as a minor character. And I was trying to track down what this was about, and apparently she played Nakaruru in the Samurai Showdown 2 commercial and in the Samurai Showdown movie that came out the same year, and recorded Image songs as Nakaruru and Mai, which she did with like a photo shoot and costume to help push. So it's sort of like a weird, I don't know if I'd call it like an in-joke, but it's a very like obscure reference decades later that she's in this.
Oh, well, she's the original Pink Ranger. Like, she was the
Pink. Oh.
So before, like, the show that was bought and turned into Power Rangers for the U.S. market, she was the Pink Ranger in that show. So.
Let me see. Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
Kyoto Sentai Jewel Ranger. Yeah. I watched for the first time a few years ago. Oh, wow.
I think it's just a case of, you know, and this is still what Japanese media does. Like, if you have something and you can get a celebrity of any level, even if it's just like, oh, she does some modeling and she, you know, she's done some, you know, commercials. Like, okay, good. Let's get her in there. Because that way, you know, the fans will show up, they'll interview her. Like, it's still the case today where it's like, if you have a movie, like, if a movie comes out in Japan and they don't have a celebrity traveling in, like a huge celebrity to travel in, they will just get any celebrity of any level. It's like, okay, here, get in the commercial, you know, wear a funny costume and tell people that you love this movie, and they will do it. It doesn't matter who it is.
That was the wave at the time. Actually, funny that we're on that topic, because I'm reading your book right now, and you touch up on that a little bit as the Japan transitioned musically in the 80s into like the idol industry. That's kind of what happened, was that there was a lot of cross media efforts,
a ton of it. And yeah, like Diamond said, it never really went away. It just kind of changed a little bit over time as to what they did with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh wow, she's okay. So she was 19 in 1994. She's very young.
So,
also Osaka local, so probably they picked her for that too.
Oh yeah. I mean, you don't have to go far to hire either one at that point, right? she also apparently voiced Cham Cham in all of her game appearances in Samurai Showdown, at least in the 90s games. I think they recast her eventually, but
for seven.
Does anyone like this one better than the OVAs? Because I get it's higher budget, but I think the story is an original story, and I just remember it being very lackluster, like very much like quick, let's write a story for a Fatal Fury movie.
Yeah, I feel like people used to like it more. I remember it being popular like when I was in college, but nowadays I don't know, I kind of like the OVAs more myself as well.
Yeah,
during the pandemic years, which was actually right around the time that I like really started to dive into SNK, I kind of like had like this like 1 month bender where I got into like any sort of animated fighting game movie. period, whether it was, you know, Fatal Fury, Street Fighter, you know, it, just anything, and they all just sort of blend together.
What a bender to go on, though. That,
oh God, I came out the other side just, I think I might have fried my brain a little bit in the process, but it was pandemic. What else was I going to do? But yeah, it's hard to say because, like I said, like all the OEAs and animes and movies, they all just kind of started blending together after a while.
Yeah, this one's got like a weird storyline where there's like some ancient mystical armor, and if someone gets all the pieces, they become like a god, which is extremely anime, and I guess it's sort of also extremely like later SNK, but not certainly these first few Fatal Fury games, which are a lot more grounded.
They start going into like they shift away from like that kind of like gritty 90s, you know, crime and martial arts into like they start putting a lot of like supernatural stuff into their games, and we're really about to start seeing that become a thing.
Start with 3. I would say 3 is the turning point.
Yep. I was looking ahead on the notes a little bit, and I think I was thinking about, I was like, yeah, KOF does it, and Sam Show does it, and the Metal Slug, even the non-fighting game stuff, the Metal Slugs do it, because they start getting, like, aliens and zombies, and...
Sengoku 3 did it.
That's that slog of a game.
If we got a Neo Turf Masters 2, we'd have to, like, I don't know, one of the characters you could pick would just be Buddha for no reason.
Oh my god.
It'd be Battle Goal for Yui, but on Neo Geo. I did want to have talked about Fatal Fury 3, but I think this is a good point to stop at, because Fatal Fury 3 really sort of, like, is sort of the prototype for a lot of the future Fatal Fury games, and I think it's best to discuss those as a unit. But this is sort of like the peak Fatal Fury era, I think, as far as its mind share and popularity. I think in the latter half of the 90s, it starts getting overtaken by King of Fighters, certainly, and the fighting game boom is starting to wind down, so they don't have that sort of helping them boost it up.
Isn't this like when SNK starts kind of running into financial troubles, too?
Yeah.
Or was that later?
It's the late 90s, so...
I would compare it to, you know, when a parent has a child, you know, if you try, your child may grow taller than you. So it's like, if you view KOF as the child of Fatal Fury, it just so happened that KOF sort of grew and blossomed into a larger presence than Fatal Fury did, but Fatal Fury still held incredible influence over that. So if you look at Fatal Fury 2 and then Special, this is like the birth and growth of Fatal Fury right up until KOF begins. And then the two necessarily need to go in different directions, because you can't, if you're going to have KOF and Fatal Fury simultaneously, then the two they need to be different, and they're going to be pretty different, you know?
And even with that, though, you still look in the face of the child and see the parental DNA, and you see that in KOF, because like we said earlier at the beginning of the episode, is that like Fatal Fury was, you know, it kind of held up the KOF roster for like a long time.
Yeah, and I think...
It still kind of does.
I think Terry's win quote in 98 is like, that's why I'm here every year. So like, even at that point, they realize... oh, wait, this guy's in every game we make, isn't he? Yeah, okay.
Terry, I'm going to keep putting him in every game.
Put Terry in a Metal Slug 8.
I'd be down for that.
He doesn't have a gun. He just...
Burning knuckle.
Yeah,
It'll be the... No, it'll be the FBI agent Terry from the King of Fighters movie.
You see what I mean? If you ask for live action Fatal Fury, that's what you might get.
You're right. I just remember, I was like, after I was done with that bender, I was like, let's go see some live action stuff. And I looked up a clip of the King of Fighters movie, and it was the scene where Rugal is first introduced, and he like comes in with like rollerblades, like a hockey mask, and he pulls off the mask, and he's just like, I'm the King of Fighters. And I'm like, I just closed the browser immediately. I was like, I don't need to watch this. I'm good. My brain can't take anymore.
That's Ray Park, isn't it? Ray Park.
It's Ray Park.
They gave Ray Park a speaking role as Rugal Bernstein.
He goes, I'm the King of Fighters, with like an accent indescribable. And I was just like, I don't need to watch this. I'm good.
Everything about that movie is incredible, and not in a good way.
Look, Ray Park is an incredibly talented physical performer, but at no point should he be allowed to speak any words on camera. I'm sorry. I love him. I love his work. Just have him play a mute, overdub him, do whatever you got to do. Do not give him lines. Sorry. Headless Horseman. Headless Horseman, perfect. Perfect role for Ray Park. Go. No head. No voice.
The David Prowse of his day, truly. So yeah, the Fatal Fury part one. Anyone have any final thoughts on like this era of the series or just the series generally?
I mean, I would argue that Fatal Fury was integral in my love for Neo Geo because while I absolutely loved a lot of the early games, you know, I'm a huge NAM 1975 fan. The other fighting games are wonderful. You know, I love the original Sengoku. It's bizarre, but I love it. But I feel like Fatal Fury and then 2 and then Special were like a really strong trilogy of, oh yeah, this is a cool game. Oh, this game's blowing up. Oh, now this game's really blowing up and we're teasing a crossover with the other game that we made that was really cool. Like, I feel like everything starts from here and I honestly believe that playing this game in 1991, 1992, 1993, it's at least part, if not the entire reason, it's part of the reason I am sitting here today in Osaka, Japan, able to speak a modicum of Japanese, and like the music from these games is still in my head. The characters of these games still fascinate me. You know, like I would argue that my outfit today is at least part Terry, at least part Blue Mary.
Sure.
I feel like I both can be explained with my no sleeves and my hot pink. Like I'm claiming both of those. I'm stealing valor from Fatal Fury.
I came this close to wearing my shirt today that had King and Chizuru on it.
Ooh.
It's a Nina Matsumoto work from a few years ago.
Oh.
And I remember wearing it to Combo Breaker back in May and getting stopped by a couple people. I'm like, oh man, that's so cool. Where'd you get that? I'm like, it's out of print, man. Sorry. But I agree. It is so cool. That's why I have it.
All right. Note to self, mug Kevin Bunch.
Yeah, when are you going to Xanadu next, Kevin? When am I going to see you there? Because I still have your copy of Match of the Millennium that I need to give you back. Brian, if you want to go next, go ahead.
Sure. It's just so influential, and for me, the big thing is the character designs. I think they, even more so than something like Street Fighter, which is like, yes, they were designed around the same time, but I feel like they have and I mean this in a very good way, a less dated quality to them. Like Fatal Fury represents like such a very specific like time in like anime and like Japanese character design. And all you have to do is just like look at Terry Bogard to see that. And that's just like, I don't mean that negatively at all. I mean it in like an extremely charming way as someone who like loves Japanese media from that time period.
Terry just kind of looks like a trucker, but like the kind of trucker who you'd want to hang out with.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's in jeans, Chucks, and like a ripped up plain white t-shirt. I mean, that's, you know, it's a little simple, but like it's a enduring, iconic look.
Yeah.
And a cool hat.
And a very cool hat, which he loves to throw around.
Yes, yep. He does. How many of those hats has he lost?
Will, go ahead.
So it's great that you guys were there when it happened so that you can give like you had to be there, experience that kind of time capsule moment. Cause for me, like I said, like I'm super late to Fatal Fury. I got Sam Show 2019, Samurai Showdown 7 is what really got me to really pay attention to SNK, having known that it's always been a thing, but just never really making that effort. So I have no nostalgia for Fatal Fury. When pandemic happened, it was right after a tournament in New York called Lunar Bout that was basically a big love letter to SNK. They had all these SNK titles there that they ran tournaments for. And I was just like, wow, all this stuff is really cool. I should explore this. And then pandemic like really fully kicked in. So I had a lot of time to explore these things, not as a competitive player, but at, you know, from like kind of a historian academic standpoint. So I go back and I look at, you know, all of the like these like the Fatal Fury 1 and Fatal Fury 2 and 3 and all that, and I have no nostalgia to cloud my eyes on this, and I'm looking at this and I'm like, from a player standpoint, like, yeah, this is rough, it's a little hard to go back and enjoy this as a player, but like aesthetically, you know, the visuals, the lore, the music, I'm like, I'm loving every second of this. Everything is so bright and colorful and larger than life. And like you said, Brian, it represents a very specific era that, you know, it dates itself, but like it's very of that era. Street Fighter II, like, you know, that's a little longer lasting because it's a little more generic. And I don't mean that in an insulting way, but I love that Fatal Fury, that SNK with Fatal Fury really leaned into its era and went all in on this because it really makes it stand out, you know, and maybe it would have a little more staying power if the games just from a gameplay perspective functioned a little bit better. But like, yeah, as like this time capsule thing, it's so fascinating. It's so cool, you know, and we got plenty more games to cover. I'm really hope, you know, and with City of the Wolves coming out next year, I really hope that there is a sort of revitalized fandom for that, especially because like 90s stuff is kind of coming back. In general, anyways, the 90s is kind of coming back and Fatal Fury is very 90s. So maybe that'll go hand in hand with like the current, like, you know, pop cultural wave that we're seeing. Like the City is coming out like right at the right time, if you ask me. Yeah, it's just so cool. One of the coolest fighting game franchises, you know, ever made. There's really no other way for me to summarize it other than it's cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of with there, with you there. The first time I really played a Fatal Fury game was Mark of the Wolves when it came out on Dreamcast, because I hadn't really gotten the chance to really sink my teeth into any of the older ones because I didn't really get to go to the arcade that often. But that one really like appealed to me, and once I started hanging out with a friend of mine who had a Neo Geo AES and he had a ton of games, he had all these older Fatal Furies, got to play them at his place. Really got a taste for them. That's what led me to get a Neo Geo and Fatal Fury 1 and Fatal Fury Special and, you know, onward from there. So even though it wasn't sort of my introduction to SNK or fighting games, I do really like Fatal Fury. I think it really exemplifies what made SNK's 90s fighting game sort of golden period so interesting and so cool. Especially, you know, the games we'll see in the back half. But even these first ones, they're interesting. They're a little rough around the edges, but I think certainly Special holds up very well. If you can play Street Fighter 2, you can play Fatal Fury Special and get a kick out of it. So this has been, with that, Retronauts, a Patreon-supported show. You can support us at patreon.com/retronauts, as this is a free episode, I believe, on the schedule. This means you may not be a subscriber already, in which case, you should consider doing so. At the $3 level, you get each episode a week early and at a higher bit rate. At $5 level, you also get access to Friday bonus episodes and Diamond Fights weekly columns, talked about Fatal Fury and other SNK games multiple times. Always great to read.
Thank you.
And, in the Retronauts Discord server, where you can discuss, you know, all sorts of cool stuff. So I think it's a great deal. I think it's well worth your money. And thank you if you already support us. Keeps us going. Where can we find all of you fine folks? Diamond, let's start with you.
Well, most of my work is for Retronauts these days, but I am available around the internet. So I would say go to my website, which is fightclub.me. So F-E-I-T, that's my last name. CLUB, that's an English word you already know, .ME, me. Fight Club is me. There it is.
Will.
You can find me on Twitter at SuperBulletWill. Totally not shilling for Alice in City of the Wolves every last second that he gets. I just earlier this year started being a writer for superjumpmagazine.com. Don't have many articles under my belt yet, but I'm, you know, it's something I've always wanted to do, and I'm trying to get more into that. I'd say my primary bag is you can just see me commentating various fighting game tournaments. You know, if you are, I guess it's a weird thing to plug. It's a little outside of the norm for something like Retronauts, but you know, if you are running any sort of SNK online or offline tournament and you need a commentator, reach out to me. Let's talk.
And Brian.
I'm on most social media as bclarkomp, which includes YouTube, where I have a channel that covers all sorts of topics on Japanese game and music history. I have a website, 1millionpower.com, which I post translations related to the same things to. A Patreon for both of those at patreon.com/1millionpower. And most recently, I also have a book that Will so kindly mentioned.
It's really good. I'm
called Gameplay. He's holding it up right now. Called Gameplay Harmonies, which is out through Limited Run. And it's about games over the years that have actually featured Japanese recording artists and musicians in the games and not just their music. So if that kind of weird stuff sounds good to you, then please check out any of those things.
Oh, is that like the Japan... with the ex-Japan Sega Saturn game where you go backstage?
Oh, that's in there.
Yeah.
You better believe it.
Oh, nice.
It's about halfway in.
And as for me, you can find me mostly on Blue Sky as far as social media goes, at Ubersaurus. I also run the Atari Archive YouTube channel and website, atariarchive.org. And that is also a Patreon-supported effort, patreon.com/AtariArchive. And also through Limited Run Games, I have a book, Atari Archive, that sort of goes through the first couple years of the Atari 2600 and its library and its history. So if you're interested in early video game history and sort of the what that looked like at the time, that's the book for you. And with that, thank you for listening. Play some Fatal Fury Special.
Play Garou, you cowards.
Good night, and hail Satan.
Done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.